Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock in London and it's 12 p.m. midday in the Cayman Islands, where on this week's What Comes Next Live, I'm joined by Virginia Chinocki, Coach V, your everyday middle-aged mum, crushing life, and also a lawyer to boot. Lots of different hats she wears. Welcome to the podcast, Virginia. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me, Tom. I'm just laughing just now listening to you with the V's titles and thinking it's a difficult one, because when someone asks you, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And you get to my stage in life and you're one of those kind of individuals that remembers your headmaster telling you back in the day, no regrets, make sure you do everything you want to do. Never say I wish I had. I'm kind of one of those individuals that's wishing I had and continuing to wish that I will. So there's 20,000 different hats, which I wish I could combine into one and just have one hat to wear rather than 20 at once.
Hmm. If I asked one of your three kids, who I know are the apple of your eye, perhaps the most outspoken one of them, and most instinctive one of them, says, if you had to say one thing about your mum, what would it be? What would they say?
Do you really want me to tell you in all honesty what they call me?
I go on.
Big bitch.
Really? They call you that? All of them?
You did ask.
What is that? What do they mean by that, though?
What would it be? I think it may be my authoritative figure, shall we say, mm-hmm. around about the house. Mm-hmm. So they say it in the nicest possible way. It's definitely not said in a condescending manner. It's always said whenever we're having a joke, and it's usually whenever I'm maybe saying exercise is a good thing, or telling Dean, for example, my 22-year-old, aren't you going on the bike today? Why have you not been to the gym? Have you applied for this job? Maybe you want to consider this, just in a usual mum fashion. Mm-hmm. So it goes along those kind of lines.
Well, I could, for there will be many different nationalities and cultures listening to this, as there always are. But your kids, like mine, really carry three nationalities, right? So you're Scots, your husband's English, and they've lived their whole lives in the Cayman Islands, right?
Yes.
So they were born in Cayman. So you carry this sort of code switching ability. And I think perhaps the Scots part of that is the sarcastic meanness, but really not mean. So calling you the B word will be meant with care and love, as well as you being a nag at times. So,
yeah.
But you were certainly, when you've worn a lot of hats in the last decade or so. And I empathize because I'm in London and people say, so what do you do? I normally just say I wrestle elephants. And they go, because if I don't really have a convenient title that lets them tick the box. And so they say, what do you mean? I says, well, there's always an elephant in the room. And they go, ooh, okay. And then they are either interested or they're not, and you can move on. But you've worn many hats, but I think, I mean, I just said to you before we went live, it was like I showed you I had a glass of water because you would give me a hard time if I was thirsty and I didn't have a drink. You can be a slightly authoritarian, slightly drill sergeant type coach, which befits somebody who was a army officer in an earlier life. But it's meant with the best of intention, right? So.
Yeah, always with the best of intention. I think I kind of go through life now where I'm not afraid to take risks, because I think having had the kind of life that I've had, I know that if you dig deep, you've always got what it takes to get you through whatever life throws at you. That doesn't mean that you're not going to have pain. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have hardship, but if you dig deep, then you've always got what it takes to get you through it. Mm-hmm. So I think knowing that, I'm not afraid to take risks, So I'm not afraid to jump and try something completely new. And maybe that's where the drill sergeant thing comes from, because I think a lot of people are afraid. They're afraid of what's on the other side, because you never know what life's going to throw at you. And maybe the drill sergeant in me is that chivying people along. Look, just do it, just do it, just do it. Because I know that you'll be all right. That even if you do something that's completely off the wall, outside of your comfort zone, you'll be okay. You'll find your way. And even if you don't end up exactly where you hoped you would be, you'll be on the road. You've always got the ability to backtrack a little bit and maybe change. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you'll always get to where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in the initial bio you sent me to put on the webpage was really long. And I said, can you shrink it? And so that's got it down to a couple of sentences. And I went, that's perfect. And then all I added to it was that Virginia is a truly inspirational woman leader in so many areas of life and business. And if I said one word about you, it would most likely be inspirational, because you've gone out there and done so many different things, and pivoted and changed and shifted. But the trajectory has always been forwards and upwards. And so sometimes, you know, one of my favorite quotes of all time is the Marianne Williamson passage called Our Deepest Fear. And I can never remember it, and I haven't got it written up in front of me. But the idea is our deepest fear is it's not that we're inadequate, it's that we're powerful beyond measure. And so actually having the fear of stepping into our potential is a hugely human and universal trait. So, you know, I remember a few years ago, you decided, it must be 6-7 years ago, you decided you were going to enter a physique competition. And, you know, that means that means you're actually going, right, I'm going to be in some skimpy bikini oiled up with all my muscles and this kind of thing. And you're going, and not everybody's going to do that, right? So, or quitting your job, and, you know, not following the fairly standard social pattern in Cayman of having a well-paid professional job, and just doing completely different things. You know, it's a great background, but we're not telling any of the audience anything about that. And perhaps talk somewhat about your background, and then really where you are now and what's next for you, what's on your mind.
Before I do, let's just quickly talk about that figure competition, because I'm going to tell you how life never plays out the way that you expect it to play out. So I was in perfect shape for the figure competition, and I was about 11 weeks out, and my waistline wouldn't shrink. No matter how hard I trained, no matter how well I ate, and I was eating to the point, my waistline wouldn't shrink. That's because I was pregnant.
Oh, was that long ago, was it? Okay.
It was that long ago. I was pregnant. So I had the baby, and 11 months later, I just didn't want to. I knew if I left it too long. So 11 months later, I stepped on the stage, having had my third child. So, there you go. So life never plays out the way you want it. You always have to have something else to deal with. So that was my little treat.
Well, that's a fantastic story. And so now that's your third kid. So how old is she now?
She's now 12.
Oh, God.
So that tells you how long ago it is. She's now 12. So that was a while ago. Yeah, that was. I was still lawyering at the time. Well, I say I was still lawyering, since I'm now kind of lawyering again. So you asked the story. I'll go through it quickly just to show you the kind of ups and downs and things that I've had. I was made a partner a good few years ago in a large UK-based law firm, and we were talking equity partnership at the time, and I just knew that I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. This is the person who grew up wanting to do something food related, but I've been talked out of that by my parents, who had never gone to university because I was that smart kid that got the straight A's.
Right.
So they had this vision of this lawyer, at least my mum had this vision of this lawyer daughter. And I think she talked me into it so much that I told everyone else that I was going to be a lawyer during the day and a baker at night, not realising as a kid that that was going to be a little bit more difficult. Although we'll get to that because, as you know, they're both being combined now. So we're at this stage of discussing equity, and I said to my husband, I can't do it, not doing it, find a job, any country, and we're out of here. Because it was a lot easier at the time for me to run away than it was for me to face the fear and tell these people that I was actually going to leave the firm because I didn't enjoy the job. I mean, who in their right minds is I was 32, 33 years old at the time. What 32, 33 year old on a 100,000 plus salary back in the day, with equity partnerships staring in the face, would turn around and say, I'm going to leave this. So I chickened out. And I put it on my husband, you find the job. So he did. He found a job in Cayman. It wasn't the dream job. We didn't have enough money to live on, so I had to go and get a job. So I ended up back in law. Despite at the back of my mind wanting to set up a food business, at that stage I had been thinking about maybe snacks for children, because I had been making lots of healthy snacks at home for my son who had some allergies. Anyway, we came to Cayman, I joined a law firm, ended up at the big law firms here, did another 7 or 8 years. And I just couldn't get out. So there was this man that I approached, and I said to this man, wonder who that was, help me leave law. It was actually Tom, for anyone who doesn't know. I asked Tom to help me extract myself from the legal profession. So I went out there, decided to set up a snack food company. I have absolutely no idea what happened, but I ended up with 18 fitness certifications, opening up a gym, not doing the snack business, deciding I didn't really want to have the gym, despite the fact that it was going really well. I should add that in amongst that, I created about 8 digital products, all of which have sold. One was featured on Brian Rose's London Real show, because I think I became one of the biggest income generator out of a course in the short period of time that I was with him. He then gave me a job as one of his lead instructors. So I ended up a lead instructor on Brian Rose's course. Thought to myself whilst I was doing that, if you can do this, I can do that too. Took a step back, ended up coming into my husband's business, which is a corporate services business in the Cayman Islands. Thought we might as well expand that, added a law firm, added compliance, woke up about 4 months ago and said to my husband, it's time for the food business. I'm in now, I'm going all in, and I'm not stopping until it's done. So there we go. So I'm now doing exactly what I said I was going to do when I was probably a 12-year-old child, of having the law firm corporate business through the day and the food business at night. Funny how it all works out.
An overnight decision, decades in the making.
Yes.
Cool. So basically that's what you're doing, lawyer in the day and you've got a food business at night.
Correct.
So you're looking to develop the food business. And yes, you and I first looked at the name and the logos and the branding over a decade ago. So it's very cool. And I know you're looking at different ideas. The other thing that more recently you put a focus on from a personal level, but also sharing with other women, was perimenopause.
Yes.
I mention that because I'm quite a passionate advocate for actually sharing information around this or information being shared. And a past guest on the podcast was Jean Chung, who has a business which morphed into a nutrition business around perimenopause, specifically peri as opposed to post. And so That's nutrition linked, and of course there's your passion for a snack food business. You're not going to be selling Cheetos, right?
So
perhaps talk about, you know, maybe there's a linkage between them or in some form, but it's also about people being healthy. And I guess the last piece to put in there is I've, you know, as some will know, I mean, I was fairly athletic and competitive at a decent level 20, 30 years ago, and I'm 56 now. And I've related to myself as being reasonably athletic ever since, but truly not that fit and a bit overweight. And I've been cycling a fair bit, but what's catalyzed me is I moved to an area which is very, very hilly, and my regular riding buddy is not much shorter than me, but a solid 30 kilos lighter. Right, which basically means he could race up the steep hills like a hare, and gravity is very unforgiving, no matter how strong you are, if you're heavy. So I'm going to talk on Thursday by the author of a book called The Midlife Cyclist, which sounds like a bit of a giggle, and my writing buddy gave it to me. But it's fascinating because it talks about evolution, and that the idea of being 40 years old and alive is an evolutionary blip.
Yeah, yeah.
Let alone being 40 or 50 or 60 plus and focusing on your health and wellness, and actually looking to be fit. And cycling in particular is, because it's low impact, is a sport that is quite remarkable. I do virtual races every Wednesday now with a local cycling club who go indoors in the winter. I'm dead last, right? I'm getting better by my own standards, but I'm dead last, and I'm one of the younger people in it, right? And it really boggles my mind of the power and aerobic capacity of people. All of that is to say that the author of the book, The Midlife Cyclist, talked about, we talk about being mindful, but he talked about having a healthful life, right? So not just a long life, but an active, vibrant, and healthy one that lasts up into your 70s, 80s, and 90s. So I just like the idea of healthful, and it just, when I read it last week when I picked up the book, it resonated for the way you tend to look at the, well, my perception is you tend to look at that holistically. So yeah. It's not just, you know, the drill sergeant piece, but it's also what are you eating? How are you eating? And I mean, you've done so many different ways of sharing and teaching that. So tell us a bit about your approach towards nutrition and healthfulness and really what you're looking to create with your food business.
Well, it's interesting that you use the word healthful because that's pretty much how I look at it. It's more from a how do I feel perspective as opposed to a how do I look perspective. So I changed the whole perception within myself of, I think, where I was, because I was always one for it. I think I need to go back and tell like the story from where it was. In my teenage years, I struggled a lot. I struggled emotionally. I was depressed, suicidal, always on diets, taking laxatives. I really was like a pretty messed up teenage kid. I was never happy within myself, and even although I was doing well at school and I had my straight A's and whatever else, I was a deeply, deeply unhappy child. And at 18, I attempted suicide, which I talk about quite a lot. Just basically thought the world would be a much better place without me, as opposed to the attempt being because of me wanting to end my own life. When that happened, I caused a lot of gut issues, and as a result of that, I needed to change the way that I ate. I had also at the same time failed the basic fitness test for the Territorial Army, believe it or not. Nobody believes that now. Whenever they look at me now, but I had failed the basic fitness test.
Which, just as a balance, I'm not sure what it would have been at your age, but something like run 3.5 miles in boots in 30 minutes or something.
It's not terribly difficult,
to be honest.
Well, I was the one being dragged around about that track and vomiting at the side of the track and having people standing trying to cheer me on because it was that bad. So there you were, I was this kid, I was unhappy with what I looked like, I was dieting all the time, I was taking laxatives, and I failed the basic fitness test, which I just couldn't understand what had gone wrong. So there I was in hospital after my failed suicide attempt. The nurses and the doctors saying, well, we need to get you special help, and me saying the only help that I need is the help I'm going to give my own head. So I booked myself a taxi, I went home, and I made the decision at that point in time that I was going to go to the gym, believe it or not. I was going to start training. So I started training. I knew I couldn't eat certain things because my gut was in such a mess. So I was having to eat a very clean diet. And I think just over a period of time, I realised that I was getting a lot happier, a lot more content within myself. I wasn't looking at myself in the mirror and thinking I was disgusting anymore. And it really just went from there. And before I knew it, I was one of the fittest women in the TA unit that I was in. We were winning competitions all over the country, competing. Most times it was just me. I was in charge of the team. I was the only female a lot of the occasions as well. That's how I met my husband when I was off on one of these courses. And it was just, it was the change in my attitude and the change in my mind. And I would clock in a lot to where I was, and I would realise that the better I ate, the better I felt. And I drew on my own Facebook page the other day, I think it might have been in LinkedIn, I drew the chart of the better I ate, the more I wanted to train, the more I trained, the better I looked. And it was just, everything was related. At the same time as this, my own mum, about, I think it was 5 years after my own suicide attempt, my own mum actually committed suicide. And afterwards, when I was looking at that and trying to analyse her situation, I had realised that she used to say to me on a very regular basis that I have this great sense of foreboding. And Dad and I had chats about that. And what it, we both agreed that Mum's great sense of foreboding would happen every 4 to 6 weeks. And it was a bit of a realisation for me of, I would then clock myself, I would then watch my own moods, and I realised as well that there was some link between where I was in my monthly cycle, where I was with my hormones, and it was a case of being able to look at myself, where am I on a monthly basis, how am I feeling, where are my hormones, how is my mood, and then what do I need to do to address all of this? I would eat better, I would exercise more, and before I knew it, I had the men that were working for me whenever I was a lawyer saying to me, do you know what we like working, why we like working with you so much, Virginia? And I would say, well, why is that? Because you're always the same. You're always very balanced.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of that was just me being conscious in my own mind. And if I felt as if I was a bit more emotional or whatever else, I'd go to the gym and I would train. I'd train harder, I'd eat better, I'd drink more water. If I wasn't drinking enough water, I would notice that my moods would get lower. If I was eating too much sugar, my moods would get lower. If I wasn't training, my moods would get lower. And that doesn't mean that I didn't have like emotions and I wasn't fluctuating, but it was nowhere near what it would have been. And it made me then wonder to what extent my own mum was struggling with those kinds of issues. And then the more I worked with women in training environments, the more I realised that it was something that was fairly common. And I thought I had it all together until I was about 48. And menopause, or the perimenopausal symptoms began to kick in. And I had to change it all again. So I had to change the way that I was eating. Increase like my iron consumption, for example, increase my magnesium intake, more B12. So I was forced to change my diet again. I was forced to reduce, although I'd always been this great advocate of carbohydrates, and all of a sudden I'm saying no, I can't eat as many carbohydrates now because that has a negative impact on my body.
Right.
I can't do as much cardio as I did in the past because that has a negative impact on my body now. If I do too much cardio, I notice that my belly begins to swell up and I start to hold water or weight or whatever else right about my midsection. So everything I'm doing now from a nutritional basis is done to educate women. Because I think what happens with women is we're all excited about getting married, having children, building up our careers. And we get so consumed by all of that that we wake up when our children are about 16 and realise that they don't actually need us anymore, probably didn't need us for about the last 3 or 4 years. We've forgotten about ourselves, but all of a sudden we're in this new stage in our life, the third age, they like to call it, menopause or menopause looming, and we've got absolutely no idea what to do to deal with it. We can't deal with the fact that the weight is all shifting and it's all gathering round about the midsection. Our butts that were once maybe quite high are now beginning to fall down. Our moods aren't the same. Our hair is changing. Our skin is changing. And everyone out there wants to put you on HRT. And HRT, hormone replacement therapy, I'm not saying don't do it, but it's a band-aid. It's not solving the underlying issues. Mm-hmm. Solving the underlying issues is changing the way you work out, changing the way you sleep, changing your mindset, increasing your water consumption, cleaning up your diet, cutting back on the alcohol.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah. I mean, and there is so much education to do. It's fascinating what you're talking about. We started with this word healthful and, you know, fundamentally what you look at is, well, is what you feel like. And you talk about feeling happy. And you've got these, I think of like a mixing desk in a sound production studio. You've got these different levers that you can work with once you have awareness around them and understand how to use them. Nutrition, I mean, you mentioned particularly nutrition and exercise. And then when you get to a certain stage of life, which, as with so many things, impacts women far more than men, you look at other things like sleep and water consumption and you just, but the fundamental thing is, how do I stay in balance? Is what you're talking about. And knowing you have those levers, you know, I think all of us, no matter our age or gender, in the different times in the pandemic felt a lot of mental health pressures. And I knew for me that one of the things was, I just need to move. So even if it wasn't the gym or I wouldn't ride my bike a lot during the worst phases because I didn't want to fall off and burden the healthcare system, right? So I would just go for long walks. And I mean, this time last year, in the middle of winter in the UK, I was doing 10 mile walks and I just realized that's what I would need to adjust. So just fascinating. Now, if we just link into the nutrition bit and around snack bars and stuff like this, I started working out again recently and doing structure training for the first time in my life and finding that at 56, your recovery from a hard workout takes days, not one day. And realizing I was overtraining, I was going, that was never overtraining when I was in my 30s. Yeah, it is now. And then my oldest son, as you know, my two oldest sons were elite competitive athletes. And he said, are you remembering to drink protein right away after you work out? And I went, clean forgot that, right? Because, you know, as you all know, you need to get it inside your body very quickly to restore. And realizing that even though they were elite athletes and they did focus on nutrition in their swim teams at university and stuff, the level to which they do it is still really basic compared to the level at which you've looked at it. So what will your food products offer to people that is either really different or just what's your point of focus on it? Once you get your products launched, because they're not out there yet, although you've got 30 plus years experience of baking.
Yeah, absolutely. Protein is absolutely crucial and it fills you up in the morning. So the first thing that I will have in the morning is a scoop of protein powder. And I don't do anything fancy with it because I look at food as fuel. We've got plenty of scope in the course of our days, weeks, to eat tasty snacks or junk or whatever else. I like my chocolate bars and whatever else as well. I'm focusing more on food as fuel, because as a female, I'm not going to say as a female, because I think it's all of us as we age, you'll lose your muscle mass. Mm-hmm. And you will also have a reduction in your bone density.
Yeah.
You need to be doing the impact work to deal with the bone density issues, but you need to have the protein in your body to keep your muscle mass. It will also keep away the hunger pangs. So mm-hmm. I think this is one of the things that people struggle with, always wanting to eat, snacking on carbs, etc., grabbing the cookies, grabbing the crisps or the chips, whatever. But protein will fill you up.
It's a body hack. Protein's a huge body hack, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, you get up in the morning and instead of having a bowl of cereal, grab a shake. You can make it tasty. I don't make it tasty, and I'm going to tell you why I don't make my protein shake tasty in the morning, because I'd rather leave my carbs for a chocolate bar. So I'll just have the protein. My husband thinks it's disgusting, but I'll just take a spoonful or my 20 grams of protein, and I will stick it into water and I will drink it, knowing that I can have that cookie or the chocolate bar or whatever later in the day without blowing my macros. So I'm focusing on protein. It will be balanced. So everything that I will do will educate you on how to fuel your body for optimal performance. And for me, optimal performance at my stage is conquering the brain fog. It's helping me sleep at night. Everything that menopause is causing me to go through, sleep deprivation, losing the moisture in my skin, lacking collagen, everything that my body is lacking, I am looking to introduce, and also to educate as well. And to educate, because I'm going through this. I've been going through this now for the last 3 or 4 years. It has been horrible. And I could have gone and taken HRT and just patched it all up. But I thought, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not, unless my doctor tells me I need to for my health, and I haven't yet been told that I need to for my health, I'm going to do everything that I can nutritionally. And do you know, I back squatted. I'm 51 and I'm not a big woman. I'm 5'8 and I weigh 130 pounds. I eat 135 grams of protein a day. That's a lot. I eat about 2,200 calories. That's also a lot. Mm-hmm. So I have plenty, but I back squatted 165 pounds, which is quite a lot considering that I weigh about 130.
20% more than your body weight, roughly.
Yeah. And I put it down to how I move, but I also put it down to the fact that I'm keeping my muscles strong, and I'm doing that by eating protein. Mm-hmm. So it's protein. It's everything that I'm going to be doing is around about protein. It's around about fueling the body. So you can go and eat your chocolate bars if you want. If you come to me, you'll come to me to learn how to fuel your body for optimal performance. So if you want to be that woman who can sleep at night, who mm-hmm. still has muscles so that your skin doesn't look all saggy and wrinkly, yeah. who doesn't have that midlife fat belly, I'm just going to say the words, but as we all get it, who wants to keep their butt high, who wants to be plumping out their skin, still have thick hair, then I'm pretty sure that a lot of the stuff that I've got is going to get you in that direction.
So what a great, and what I hear one of your drivers is about education. So everything you do will be educating people. And it is, I mean, I know a lot of women who are at the similar stage of life. I know some of them quite well. And it's a huge amount of time, energy and focus to educate yourself, because everybody, there's some commonalities that you talked about, but everybody is having a different experience. And I think men in particular just don't get how challenging it is. You talk about brain fog. to have, however you've been before in terms of mood and balance and this kind of thing, it changes, and it can change for a couple of years, or it can be 6 or 7 years. And being around family members, friends, and others close to you, if you're a guy, is simply a different level of being understanding than it was before. And I know your husband quite well, and he's a pretty cool dude. He's a very cool dude, in fact. So there is a lot of education to be done, because, you know, when you go to a doctor, they simply don't have much time. So it's very easy for them to go, we'll give you the Band-Aid. It's to take 4 aspirin and call me in the morning. But to really manage your own state, and you talk, the words you look, you know, with summarizing some words you talked about is how I feel, right? And about balance. And then you talk about optimizing. Optimizing is not maximizing. And it's really fascinating that, you know, your athletic performance has always been at a very high level relative to the general population. And even though it still is, what you're actually really talking about is that optimizing. It's not maximizing. It's not the absolute maximum squat you can do, but it's like, can I be strong and sleep well and feel good about myself and just balance those levers that you talked about in your those challenging teenage years that you've learned from. So I'd say you've educated the audience a lot today, and you've added to my, you and I have known each other quite well over the years, but you've definitely added to my education. So I'm also conscious we're running a fair bit over time, and I like the podcast listeners to not have to take too much more than half an hour. So take as long, but, and that said, I like to let my guests have the last word, and I've just rambled for a couple of minutes to summarize. Take time just to, what thoughts do you want to leave people with today?
So for any women out there of my age, I think in particular, and for the men roundabout, because I think you have to understand what we're going through, we're the trailblazers. Mm. We are the first generation of women who are out there looking after elderly parents or being concerned about elderly parents, who we may need to support our children because they're finding it really difficult to get a leg up in the world that we're in at the moment, with property prices, salaries not going up, etc., etc. We're also in senior jobs. We're in management positions. We're running the household. We're running businesses. That's not what the women before us were doing. Mm-hmm. If you want to manage it all, the key to managing it all is being healthy, and being healthy is a combination of your diet, your exercise, and your sleep. It doesn't need to be painful. You don't need to deprive yourself. You don't need to diet. Simple changes like protein, water, sleep. It's massive, absolutely massive. If I do one thing, it's to take away the confusion. And to tell people that it really is quite easy to stay ahead of the game. The healthier you are, the happier you are, the more successful you'll be, the more money you'll have, and just think how much better life will be if you can tick all those boxes.
Brilliant. And protein, water, and sleep. I love things in threes. Virginia, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've learned a lot. Many thanks.
Thanks for having me.